Welcome back, everyone.
This is where we need that cling, 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 cling. Exactly.
If you're on the RSG, please come and sit at the table. Eric has very important things to tell you about.
We hope that everyone had a pleasant rest last night. Yesterday was a big day. Glad to see everybody back. This morning in plenary, we're through the agenda and remind you guys of the workflow for the work sessions for today. And then we'll go up and we'll finish our discussion yesterday, which was an overview and cross-cutting observations from all of the different draft options for arrays and proposals. And then we will proceed to break out into our work group sessions around 8:30 this morning. So we heard yesterday at the end of the day when it was decided that the groups were pretty well spent and our time wasn't well spent in working in work groups, that it would be good to find a little bit more time to stay in the work groups today. And so we have done that, and I'd like to just walk through the agenda. We will start the work group sessions at 8:30 this morning. They will go to lunch. And then lunch will be, I think, a working lunch for many of the groups. This is what we did in the work sessions, and we think it worked effectively. And then you will continue to work in your work group sessions until 1:30. And then at 1:30, we want to take an hour to make sure that we get to confirm the text and the shapes of the draft options for MPA arrays that you will have produced at that point. At 2:30, we'll have public comment, and then at 2:45, our last agenda item will be to discuss the strategy for continuing development of MPAs for the RSG and steps to prepare for our next meeting. To remind you guys, the product that we're looking for by the end of the day today is a revised and completed template form. This is what needs to get produced, and staff will be there both producing the form on the computers and taking in any, you know, making any revisions to shape files on the GIS at the same time. The SAT needs this information by Wednesday. That means we need to get it by the end of the day today. So after today, there will not be any more changes made. We just can't go through any more iterations.
Any more changes to this iteration of the arrays. There will be many more changes, of course, through the process.
So what needs to be included in the arrays include information on MPA types, boundaries, allowable uses, regional goals addressed. We don't need to be specific about objectives at this time, and how to consider existing MPAs.
One other point. Obviously, members of the public are interested in when can we see these maps? Can we get hard copies of these maps? As I said yesterday, this event is a work session. We're still building these very interim products. Staff expects to have a set of all of the internal work team arrays and what we call the proposals external to the work team in about a week's time, posted to the website and then available to be printed out in hard copy. So these maps are not available today, and that's quite intentional because the work is not finished, not even to this next point of getting these options laid out.
Right, and we understand that not everybody is able to download the maps off the website, and so if you'd like to get hard copies of them, please contact someone from staff, and when the maps become available, we'll send you hard copies.
Actually, I'd like to specifically request that folks contact Delbra. Delbra's in the back of the room. Delbra, can you wave your hand? Delbra. Wave and say hello. Good morning. So if members of the public or anyone is not able to download maps, please see Delbra and provide her with your contact information so we can add you to a print mailing list. And we will make sure that we get those materials to you when they're available in about a week.
Okay, so one of the things that we need to accomplish today is our public comment period, which is agendized for 1:45.
We were trying to delay.
We heard very strong requests from our work team members for more time to get their work done. So we might need to flex a little bit on that public comment time. And if you've planned your schedule around it, our apologies, but it's really essential that the work teams have sufficient time to complete their arrays. What time would be?
We're looking at 2:30 now for the public comment.
Yeah, 45 minutes later.
One thing, Scott, too, that I wanted to make sure that everybody was aware that we have a member of our Blue Ribbon Task Force with us this morning, fresh in from D.C., Kathy Rehise-Boyd. Kathy is a returning veteran. She was on the first Blue Ribbon Task Force and is one of the five now. So we're thrilled to have her part of the process, and make sure you introduce yourself to her if you don't know her.
Yes. Thank you very much. It's great to be here. I'm sorry I couldn't attend yesterday. I had to speak in D.C. on another important topic, global warming. So diverse array of things to deal with.
And Kathy had the opportunity to watch the Central Coast process at some of its more challenging moments. So I think you'll be pleased with what you're seeing today. But you can draw your own conclusions, of course.
Good. Welcome, Kathy. I'd like to point out that the work sessions that will be taking place soon are open to the public. So members of the public are welcome to latch on to one of the particular work groups and attend as observers. Just to remind folks of the workflow for the workgroup activities, and this may vary depending on the workgroup, but in general, we're doing our overview now, but you're going to spend a fairly big chunk of time working through the key geographic areas that you've already identified in the template, with the objective of identifying 1 to 2 NPA options for each geographic area. Time permitting, it'll be helpful to look across the entire study region and see if there are possible gaps that remain to be filled. These may be, again, gaps in habitats represented, goals to achieve, or spacing. And then we want to make sure that time is left to determine how existing MPAs will be addressed. There is a whole page of the template that is dedicated toward that. That's critical for the SAT review. And then take some time to look across all of the options you've identified for these main geographic areas and assemble them into two options, an option A and an option B. And then we will make sure to take time to confirm that we have everything loaded correctly into our computers.
Oops. Francesca, sorry.
In some instances, if we have agreement, for example, on our Moss Beach array and our Bodega array, where the whole group agrees with the one array, do we really need to come up with two?
No. In fact, those might be common. If you have globally two arrays for the entire study region, maybe those two are common elements.
Okay.
Late breaking news. I was going to give the locations of the work groups, but apparently this has already changed. But Susan is a... Okay, thanks. So what you see on the screen here is going to change briefly. The Emerald group will meet in this room. Jade is not going to meet upstairs, but at the far end of the building in the gallery room. And the Turquoise group will meet in the conference room, which is, if you go toward the restrooms, it's the next room in. So it's the main room, conference room, gallery room. Okay. Moving on to continuing and completing our discussion that we started yesterday about cross-cutting observations, I have four people on my list, and again, I wanted to thank you for holding on to your important questions.
Oh, sure. Please, go ahead, Melissa.
I'm sorry, just before we begin that discussion, because I know once we start that and get started, we'll break up. Just a couple of logistical things. In the back of the room where we had the agendas and all the meeting materials yesterday at the entrance, there are binders for regional stakeholder group members. These are empty binders. We have 2-inch binders, and I believe they're 3 or 4-inch larger binders, whichever you want or need, because I know some of you have so much materials at this point that they're overflowing. So we brought you some extra binders, and we also brought some extra tabs, if you want divider tabs to add into those. They're in the back of the room. Delbra has those for you, so please feel free to take advantage of those.
Okay, thank you, Melissa. Okay, from yesterday I had Bill Bernard, John Meller, Bob Breen, and Bob is not here today. I don't know if Rick can take his question, and then Fred. So, Bill.
Yeah, my question from yesterday was concerning the clearance issues. Have we looked into what the U.S. Coast Guard regulations is concerning the navigable waterway issues and the proposed, you know, the clearance issues around bird colonies and seals and such things?
And so the question is there specified clearance guidance for these particular types of colonies?
Yeah, the question is directed that way. I think we need to consider that before we're making these, you know, opting for, you know, clearance proposals and such like that. For example, I don't know what the Coast Guard and Navajo, you know, waterways is, and, you know, do we have the authority to interfere over that type of what's considered a Navajo waterway by issuing a, you know, by going for like a, some kind of clearance? I see there might be like some technical issues going on here.
Tom Matush.
Does he have a follow-up?
Have we got it? Okay. The issue regarding the birds was decided by Fish and Wildlife a number of years ago. So there are rules and regulations in place surrounding the Farallon Islands that were extensively discussed, and there's a rule matrix that applies to the Farallon Islands at this time.
Is that something that's available, Tom, for?
Yes, we could easily get copies of that. It involves seasonal closures and a number of different things. We'd be changing what people have worked on for a number of years through a number of different government agencies if we come up with something new.
Okay, good. Yeah, if you could provide that to staff, we can make sure that all the stakeholders get it. John Meller?
Yeah, with the no disturbance zones, I just want to remind people that we would have to make sure that the safe anchorages were left open and safe passages through breaking bars, like for instance at Point Bonita, were left open. And also, if you made like a 1,000-foot no disturbance zone, I think it'd be very difficult to enforce accurately, because most people's radars like have quarter mile rings or eighth mile rings. And I think you could ask people not to go in there, but I think to actually set it in stone, I think it'd be very difficult to enforce.
Yeah, thank you, John. I guess Rick for Bob. Rick for Rick.
Yeah, I know that Bob's teaching today, but I didn't actually get his specific comment, so I can't bring it up. But I had two subjects that I thought related to the work we're going to do this morning. The first one having to do with the Farallons, that I've been asking within my group that we close some fishing areas, and I realize that that's going to create hardship, but part of the consideration is that this is an important ecosystem, and I think some of it needs to be allowed to function as a natural system. The other part is that the juvenile rockfish are actually part of the forage out there. And I had committed to my work group that I would document my, you know, what I learned about that, which I did. And I would actually like, if it's okay with the RSG, I'd like to send that upstairs to the SAT to see if they agree. So basically the question is, will an MPA that protects the Farallon rockfish increase the abundance of juvenile rockfish in the subregion? And that could be scaled 100%, 60, 30, you know, whatever. But would it make a difference? And so if it's okay with everybody, I'd like to send that along to the SAT to get their opinion. Because it's sort of fun. It's one of the fundamental parts. The other part is getting natural ecosystem function out there.
Rick, it seems like a valid question to pose to the SAT. Obviously, we don't know how they'll deal with it.
Right. They may tell me I'm all wet, and that's okay.
We'll capture it and pass it along.
I can live with that, yeah. The other one is on the no disturbance zone. IRENA had set 1,000 feet, and the SAT guideline was 400 to 500 meters. And since we're about to start going to our groups doing these things, we ought to know which one we're working with. And I personally would go with the 400 meters, but do we have any guidance on that?
Tom Matush, I know, wants to make a comment, as does Ken and Sean and IRENA. But let's consider first as an I-team Rick's question. He indicates that there are a couple of different sources of guidance. Do we have advice as an I-team as to which one the groups should consider? IRENA?
I can comment on the recommendation and what the logic was behind that recommendation.
Right.
That will help. So you're right, the sheet says for 100% to remove 100% of the disturbance is 400 to 500 meters. The group was trying to address disturbance, trying to come up with, so for 100%, those are the right numbers. 1,000 feet, I think they picked 1,000 feet. It would alleviate 92% of the disturbances, almost 100% of the flushing events, and it's a kind of an easy round number that would probably work for the majority of the coast, and so that was the recommendation. So it is somewhat compromised from the 100%. And so if the groups, want to do the 100%, I mean, that's certainly an option. This was a recommendation, kind of a recommendation from this group to try to highlight areas and try to kind of give a rule of thumb.
Okay. So the logic was it's a round number. It reduces or addresses 92% of the events, and you said most of the flushing events. Okay. Susan.
Relative to distance from shore and these kind of things, I did talk with enforcement after the meeting yesterday, and along the shoreline, enforcement does not really needs lines defined by coordinates to be able to enforce. So if you can today, when you're working in your groups, look if you have a preference for a certain distance from shore, we'd like you to try to identify coordinates that could be associated with an approximation of that, more squared off. If there are other alternatives that come about after after the department prepares its memo for you, then in the next iteration you can consider something else. That's my recommendation.
Thank you. Okay, just a process note here. We had Fred still, and then a number of different cards went up. It is 8:30. We do want to break out into our work session. So if you still have a point that is very important to be made, please make it very briefly because we want to move on, Fred.
I think I was originally responding to something Kellogg's had brought up yesterday and what a number of people had brought up, and that was the concern that creating an MPA would cause fishing pressure to expand to other areas and what that effect might be. And there were some that was brought up numerous times in discussion. I just was planning on reiterating the point that fisheries management is only one function of the overall Marine Protected Act, of the goals behind the Marine Protection Act. And Rick started getting to the other point, which was, natural ecosystem functioning in habitat types is another key function of the Marine Protected Act. And so by creating MPAs, we're not just the main goal isn't necessarily fisheries management. There's other goals that are there in mind, and just wanted people to keep that in mind. And just at this point, just to answer this quick discussion that was going on that John brought up, if you want to make sure the boats can read everything, a quarter of a mile is about around the flushing distance you folks are talking about, so or the disturbance distance. So maybe we could just call it one quarter mile or a half mile rather than using meters or feet.
Okay, thanks. I have Sean, Francesca, Ken, and Tom, and please keep these brief.
since we're beating the disturbance thing to death, I just wanted to, I noticed when she was going through her list yesterday, one of the sites that was on the list for the 1,000-foot buffer was Hog Island. I fished there and launched there a lot. And I think the Miller Cove launch is probably within 1,000 feet of Hog Island. So it would be an area where it essentially you wouldn't be able to utilize that facility, which is right in the middle of being totally remodeled and is heavily used. So it's just a reality check on that site. You may need to change those boundaries or something to allow that facility to continue being used.
Okay. Thank you for pointing that out. Francesca.
I wanted to volunteer to organize a caucus to talk about these disturbance issues, because for people who don't realize it and don't understand navigating in and out of the Golden Gate and the bar, we're going to be fighting a 6-knot flood tide this weekend, so there's no way people can navigate 1,000 feet nor 400 meters around Point Bonita. So there are a lot of other considerations, so I would suggest that before any memos go out, that a smaller working group discuss some of the other considerations.
Is this something that, I guess, folks who are interested in doing this should contact Francesca by the end of the meeting today, and you guys can self-organize, and then you'll prepare some information for staff? Okay, thank you. So interested folks, contact Francesca. Ken, and then Tom.
Just a quick question for Irina, actually, on this the bird molestation issue.
bird molestation.
That's my word. No, actually, Rick stole part of my thunder, most of my question. But did your organization, the Gulf Fairlines, make recommendations as to what type of craft should not be there? And the reason I bring this up is I was reading an article the other day about Drake's Bay and about kayaks bothering the birds. And I was talking to Bob yesterday, and he said that it's not just motorized craft. Is part of your proposal different type craft?
So the recommendation that came to the sanctuary from this technical advisory group that's part of the Seabird Colony Protection Program, which is a state and federal agency program, we talked about all vessels. So recognizing the fact that kayaks do, because kayaks can get close, much closer than, you know, conventional motor craft, so that's a concern too. So the recommendation was for a no vessel transit zone, no vessel, including those that are not motorized. That was the recommendation.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Tom, and then Shanti has the final word.
Back to life. I'd also urge you, when you're considering these special closures, to think about the number of exceptions that come out. Right now, there's currently anchorage in Fisherman's Harbor that's been around for over 100 years. And how are you going to allow safe anchoring in an area? And there's also a mooring buoy there. There's a second mooring buoy over by the West End, and you're going to have to start creating exceptions for who can use the mooring buoys and when. You're also going to be interfering with all the supplies that are brought out to the island and saying, okay, well, if you're bringing supplies, now we've created another exception. If we're transferring personnel, we have to create another exception. And I just see that the list of exceptions, and if you start thinking about exclusion zones, pretty soon you're going to have a 2-page list of the number of exceptions that it's going to take to cover and say, well, you know, I've got a number of people here, a number of issues, a number of incidents, a number of anchorages that simply don't fit into this protocol.
Thank you. Shanti?
Actually, just a really quick comment, not on the bird molestation issue. Yesterday we decided to, you know, anyone that wanted to add some species to the species likely to benefit list sort of come through me. I haven't heard anything. So I wonder if we could, Do we need this by the end of the day today or by the end of the week, if people want to just kind of send me some emails or something to build the list? How do you want to do that?
Mary indicates that toward the end of the week would be fine. And just a clarification, these are suggestions for additions to the list, not
yes.
additions.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Going back to the navigation and work team idea, I think it would make sense for interested members of the RSG to work in conjunction with Susan Ashcraft as she's developing this memo. And so I don't want it to be an ad hoc group. I would like it to be an established work team to work with Susan, and she's very open to that arrangement.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate your cross-cutting comments. Let's break out into our breakout groups now. This room will be Emerald.
Irina.
Sorry. I just wanted to say something really fast. I'm hearing a lot of angst about the seabird disturbance zone recommendation, and so one of the things I just want to say, we brought this recommendation. It is a recommendation. It's based on kind of the biological factors, but that's the reason we're bringing it to this group, is because we want to hear about all the other factors we need to consider. And not all areas are alike. In some areas, this is going to be much easier to put into place than others. And so that's what we're trying to do by bringing it to just the full RSG. I mean, we could have had an option to just bring it to our sub-teams or something like that, but we wanted to bring it out here, out in the open, so that we can have a discussion and figure out something that works. So, and that's our intention in this. And so I really appreciate hearing, right now, you know, I've been hearing a lot of the concerns about the Farallon Islands. That's a big one. I think there's some really valid comments about navigation around Hog Island and around Point Bonita. And those are some things that, you know, we kind of flagged ourselves as issues. So that's what we want to do with all of you, is kind of work out on some possible solutions to this.
Okay, thank you. So lunch will be served in this room at 12 o'clock, and then folks can take it back to their breakout rooms. We are convening back here in plenary at 2:30 for public comment.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're ready to come down the home stretch. And stretching literally, I'm sure, is something that many RSG members had to do. That was a quite arduous but productive six-hour work session. And we're happy to report that, in fact, all three groups accomplished their mission of arriving at two arrays. So well done. We'll repeat that, though. So what we would like to do, where are they? I wanted to invite Eric to make a couple of comments on his observations of the efforts of the work teams, and then we'll give you slight agenda adjustment, and in a very few minutes, we're going to take public comment.
I think it would be difficult to report back on all of the changes that were made in each of the three work groups. I do think it is interesting to note that there were different approaches taken to developing the arrays, and that I know in at least one of the work groups, there was a a very deliberate decision made to create a more restrictive and a less restrictive array for the purposes of maximizing feedback from the SAT. And I know that in at least one other work group, there was a very deliberate effort made to actually mix and match the more and less restrictive MPAs in an effort to create something more in the middle rather than creating bookends. And I think that the different approaches taken, the different regions that we're focused on, and in fact, these different arrays will be very important in this phase of the process because it's really helping to maximize the amount of information you're going to get back from the SAT. And so I think that that was the whole, you know, one of the major intents of doing this workgroup process, and I think it's been largely achieved.
So once again, for members of the public, what we have done over this last day and a half is we've continued work on a set of options. And this set of options is going to be packaged up by the staff and transmitted to the science advisory team, who will meet and evaluate these options and present that feedback. And then begins an iterative process of evaluation, Blue Ribbon Task Force review, and then department review and further revisions by the regional stakeholder group. So this is one step along the way, but a very important one. And as I said, you actually saw over these last 2 days something on the order of 9 or 10 different sets of options being put together. So that really is a great tribute to all of you and I think a significant accomplishment. Ken, I wondered if you or Melissa wanted to make any observations or comments before we turn to public comment.
First, I would just like to acknowledge the tremendous amount of work that was accomplished this weekend. The fact that we can sit here and say we have 6 arrays that have come out of our 3 work groups for initial evaluation by the science advisory team, et cetera, I think is a tremendous testament to the commitment and dedication of the folks sitting around this table and around the alternatives table. And I want to just acknowledge and give yourselves a little pat on the back for that work. It really is significant. So one of the things, and I know Eric and Scott are probably going to summarize a little bit later when we talk about next steps, but for members of the public who may not stay for that final discussion, just want to highlight a couple of important dates. First, on the 13th of November, the Science Advisory Team will meet for that initial evaluation of arrays. On the 28th of November, we are offering up the opportunity for the Regional Stakeholder Group members to come back in work group sessions, probably in the San Rafael area again, to begin doing additional work based on what you've heard from the science team evaluation, as well as from the Blue Ribbon Task Force review on the 19th and 20th of November and the department's input. And then, of course, you will come back in December the 11th and 12th, and I believe that meeting is in Pacifica, if Delbra is here. Yes, that meeting is in Pacifica on the 11th and 12th of December to come back and again, further refine. So for members of the public, that's sort of a next 6-8 weeks sort of Reader's Digest of where we're heading.
Good. Ken, any comments from you? You're good? All right. We had agendized a public comment. We apologize for those of you who have been waiting around for a chance to address the regional stakeholder group, but it was important that they finish their work for at least today. If you do want to make a public comment, could you please stand up so we can get a sense of how many speakers we have today? Similar numbers to yesterday. I think we'll use the same approach. We'll ask that you try and be concise, and we'll give you 2 minutes each to make your comments. And again, please do introduce yourself and tell the regional stakeholder group where you're from and what your interests are as you do that introduction. Thank you. We're using the beeper thing. Yes.
Okay, I'm Lori Mueller. I'm with the Redwood Coast Land Conservancy, which is the local land trust here. Our area of interest is from the Russian to the Navarro Rivers. And I wanted first to thank you for your comprehensive and inclusive effort to include, you know, and to protect the marine life along this region of our coast. I would like to point out in my comments that this northern area is very extended and essentially rural, and many of the conservation groups who are working to protect marine life are not here today. So I'm not speaking as a spokesperson for them, but I would like to point out that there are many groups that are working to protect marine life and marine life habitat here. Audubon and Native Plant Society are the large groups, but many small groups with specific areas of interest. And they have useful perspectives and, in some cases, solid scientific data that may that have not been reflected here. And I would, the mic's going in and out. These groups of the non-consumptive users are not organized. And furthermore, we don't have local representation here. So I would hope that that the work groups would be able to consider incorporating information that might be coming in a little late to the process, because I don't think most of the groups here are aware of the importance of the work you're doing and the long-range significance it will have for our coast. I will be talking to some of the groups to encourage them to send you what information they have, and I would hope that you could incorporate that in your deliberations, and I would appreciate knowing who might be a specific contact for providing that kind of information. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Melissa, do you want to respond briefly?
So depending on the type of information that these groups have, if it's new data or new data sets that you're proposing, one, I would first confirm that it's not already in our draft or in our regional profile, which a lot of the stakeholders here really spent a tremendous amount of time trying to help us ensure that we had most of it covered. But if there are some data sets that are potentially useful, valuable to the group, and should be utilized, Mary Gleason is probably the best person to contact. And if it's more general information or it's about outreach and education and those sorts of things, I'm happy to speak with folks. And then Elizabeth Pope Smith, is she still here? Elizabeth's in the back right behind you. She would be another great person to touch base with.
Thank you, and thank you for the offer of the information. Yes, go ahead.
I'm Sandra Bush, and I live on the Sea Ranch and run, am the docent coordinator for the Harbor Seal Rookeries there, and I have a request, and I know I'm coming late to this, but I'm going to read this hopefully in 2 minutes, and maybe Jack Likens will give me an extra 2 minutes because he had four yesterday. There are two Harbor Seal Rookeries recognized on the Sea Ranch in Sonoma County. A docent program has functioned during April and May when birthing and nursing are taking place since 1996. 90 docents actively monitor these rookeries to educate members and visitors to the Sea Ranch about harbor seal behaviors. They attempt to lessen disturbance of sensitive birthing processes. The 1996 Board of Directors of the Sea Ranch permitted the access stairs closure to Tide Pool Rookery in Unit 24. The docent program has staffed and monitored this and another haulout at Green Cove in Unit 18 since that time. I have attached the 2007 season report with this request. During the attendance at the entire session yesterday of your workshop, where you're doing wonderful work, I became aware of a possible different type of protection for these areas. The Department of Fish and Game representative mentioned that seasonal closures of areas to abalone diving, picking, and shore fishing might be a way to handle disturbance issues in a vulnerable marine mammal population. 2 years ago, in meeting with two local divers, our dive community, Richard Lewis asked, why not just close the area during pupping? This now seems a reasonable action with increasing pressure on the intertidal area of the Sea Ranch. Further, this does not put the entire 10 miles of ocean frontage in a protected area that would engender member dissatisfaction. The marine mammal stakeholder from the Marine Mammal Center approached me at the October 16th session and asked if I had mapped out these areas, and I admitted that I had not. I am now requesting putting these two small areas, neither being in the public access corridors, in some form of protection by this Marine Life Protection Act status. Attached is a map that shows the two areas. Basically, there have been harassment disturbance issues during April and May pupping season. Inadvertent as they may be, disturbance does happen. Additionally, since 2006, the Sea Ranch has signed on as a steward with the Bureau of Land Management's California Coastal National Monument for islets and rocks along our coast. A task force is working diligently observing and cataloging flora and fauna and seabird usage for this program. A seasonal protected area fits in nicely with this federal program, and thank you very much for the time and considering this as a seasonal closed protected area.
Thank you very much. And could you please... Just please go ahead and give it to I-Team staff, and we'll be glad to include it in our materials. Thank you very much.
My name is Tom Trumper. I'm the chairman of the California Sea Urchin Commission. And what I'd like to do is give you kind of a brief history of sea urchins. I started diving sea urchins in 1975 in Southern California. At that time, California Department of Fish and Game was quicklining sea urchins because they're such an invasive species, they were wiping out the kelp beds in Southern California. Also, a company called Kelco, which is a kelp harvester in Southern California, was also quicklining. When the sea urchin divers started harvesting them, they quit doing that. Actually, there was a court injunction to make them quit quicklining because they were also killing other species that were on the bottoms. Since that time, the sea urchin divers have harvested from Northern California to Southern California, and the kelp beds have just came back miraculously. You guys can just drive up down the coast here and see where before there weren't. The kelp beds are sparse. There wasn't hardly anything in them because of the sea urchins. The sea urchins, what they do is they attack the kelp. That's their favorite food. After they eat the whole fast and everything, they eat everything that's there. And if you guys in your MLPAs, if you do not allow sea urchin harvesting in these areas, you're going to have the same thing that we had before we had the sea urchin harvesting. They're going to come in, and they're just going to wipe out your kelp. And with the kelp, what happens is that when the kelp grows, all these other species move in to live in the kelp. They come in, and they breed in the kelp. That's where they spawn. They have their young. The young have hiding places. Without that there, all your work is going to be gone. It's going to be for nothing, because the urchins will move into these areas. And also, when the urchins are taken out of the areas, the other species, like the abalone and other small crabs and stuff, have a chance to move into the areas and repopulate. So I'm just asking you guys, when you make these things up, and we're not against the MLPAs. We're not against them at all. What we want to do is to be able to control the urchins that are in the areas. With the laws that we have with Fish and Game now, the urchins have been stabilized. We have a size limit. We can't pick under that. The urchin will not be annihilated. We will have sea urchins, and I just ask you guys to consider that.
Thank you very much. Ed, real quick. I would prefer that you do it offline. Thanks very much.
Yeah, my name is Robert Jentz. I have Ocean Fresh LLC, which is one of the main seafood processors in Noyo Harbor. We employ roughly half of all the seafood processors in that harbor. And part of the I'm speaking mostly to sea urchin because we rely on sea urchins. You only have two working companies that employ more than 20 people in the harbor now, because we've dwindled down due to the federal restrictions on the ground fish. And that used to make up most of the working harbor. But now if you reduce the areas that the urchin divers can, roam into, which is a big part of that fishery, they need a lot of area to find urchins that are marketable for the market. And they very selectively harvest these urchins. And they're not really doing anything really damaging to the area and hurting the ecosystem. So I would just implore you to include urchins as a species that is not contributing to any kind of degradation to the environment or to the ecosystem, because as Tom said, he's got over 30 years diving. He's very experienced if you want to know anything about underwater. And we're just fighting for our survival in the harbor, because if you've been to Noyo Harbor, you can see that the fisheries have gone downhill due to a lot of protection of the industry, and we can't handle very much more of this. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your comments.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rob Cousins, and I'm representing the Mendonomo Marine Life Conservancy. I'd like to follow on a little bit in a slightly different direction from what was just mentioned by the two gentlemen previous. I believe that the science advisory team should be asked to discuss whether there may be a future need for human intervention to maintain ecological balance in MPA's missing key species. The particular example that we're looking at and talking about here would be the absence of sea otters here to control urchin populations. I believe there may be other such examples elsewhere, but the general issue is, can we maintain in a reserve or any kind of marine protected area an ecological balance if we have already imbalanced the situation? And I would just simply say further, if the science advisory team could foresee a need for this, it would be wise to put a mechanism in place now rather than having to deal with this issue when it comes up later on. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm Jack Likens, consumptive conservationist, I guess I'm going to describe myself as again. I'd like to say, first of all, I was very impressed with what's been going on for the last 3 days. I attended the meeting in Point Arena all day yesterday and all day today, and I didn't really have much confidence that a process like this could work with so many people and trying to design something by committee, but it seems to me that it is working, and I think in large part due to the people that are on the stakeholders group. I was very impressed with the fact that you listened to the people in Point Arena, you listened to the people who spoke yesterday, and you listened to the people that are speaking today. And I saw, as I said, in your small groups today, how you went and adjusted what you had done based on what you heard the day before. I think that was very good, and I just wanted to say I'm very impressed with that. Now, as far as Sandy Bush taking some of my time, that's fine. I would not oppose having a seal rookery small closure time for the pupping season. I am an abalone diver, but I think they're already kind of federally protected by the fact that you have to stay more than 100 yards away from them. So I don't know how much really good it would do, but if that'll make Sandy happy, I'm willing to support it. Because I'm a good guy.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your kind comments and community-based willingness to share. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Bonnie Bourne. We've met before.
Yes.
I also want to thank all of you guys for working so hard. I think it's amazing what you've done in the short time. I'm just so impressed, and thank you for considering everything. I was asked to just mention briefly an issue at Bodega Head, between Bodega Head and Bodega Rocks. Sometimes, because of the winds in the high seas, we have to go around that area. But most of the time, we go through that area to go out to the ocean. We have a predominant northwest wind with a northwest swell, and it gets shallower as you get close in from the Whistlebuoy into Bodega Head. So it's oftentimes in the afternoon you're not allowed to go through there because it's pretty messy. I just wanted to let you know about that part. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
This is Judy Kendall, and I'm the sister. What I wanted to talk about is we listened to the group that was in here going over their maps and everything. I'm totally impressed as well. However, I have a few questions that maybe you might consider. One would be that from Bodega Head, I guess it's they have it proposed to be closed all the way up to Salmon Creek and maybe a little farther. There happens to be a huge beach between North Salmon Creek and Muscle Point, and that is one of the beaches that is accessed by Bodega Dunes State Park and also Salmon Creek. And a lot of people do perch fishing along that beach. It's a perfect place for perch. And if you close that entirely, even to shore fishing, a lot of the people that come to the beaches to have picnics and their husbands or wives, some wives fish too, they won't be coming to those beaches because there's nothing for them to really do except for have a picnic. So I'd just like to have you think about Bodega Bay area of having, what this gentleman over here said, a ribbon along there where people can still fish from the shore. All of our rock cod and ling cod fishing is closed now by Fish and Game because of some, I won't talk about that part. But anyway... But what we have now is only shore fishing, and we have a lot of people that come into our business that can't do anything but do shore fishing. And now if you close that entirely along there, we won't have anybody to come and even do any shore fishing. So, we don't have that many people that come actually and do that. So, it's maybe to you it sounds like, well, then we don't need to worry about that area, but we really do. And I really would appreciate it if you would consider that. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Who is our next speaker? Yes, sir. Go ahead.
My name is Alan Jacobs. I'm a retired school teacher, science teacher, and I taught at Point Arena Schools for 28 years. I was a salmon troller at Point Arena for 20 years. I had a lot of positive strokes written down here. I'm skipping him because 2 minutes is almost nothing. I have many concerns of the Point Arena part of the proposal and too many to get to. So I want to speak to you on my one concern that other people aren't addressing, and that is the availability of documents and maps at this meeting. It's been very frustrating for me to be a public participant. I can't follow what you're talking about because you're pointing to maps that I can't read from a distance. You're referring to objectives and goals that I don't have a complete worksheet to go from. I was elected to the local school board. I served a full term. During that time, I became very aware of public's right to information and especially the Brown Act. I see the light blinking, so let me go straight to it. If you were a local organization, you would have had to pass out all of that to the general public. And because the light's getting short, let me just read to you the second paragraph of the Brown Act. Even though through loopholes you don't apply, I'm appealing to the members so that I hope that they would adopt some of the things. The second paragraph says, the people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. The people in their delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. The people insist on remaining informed so that they may retain control over the instruments they have created.
So, Mr. Jacobs, why don't you go ahead and finish your comment? We actually had a very good exchange yesterday, and you've made, I think, been eloquent about your request for trying to get documents done ahead of time, and you and I had a conversation about the challenges and the efforts in that direction. But please go ahead and finish your comments.
Well, basically, what I did was to give you the beginning and the middle and the end and skip 3/4 of what I had notes on. So it's like it's hard to go back and pick bits and pieces. But the gist of it is that this is a public meeting, and if in fact it was a local entity rather than a state entity, you would have been subject to the Brown Act. You would have had to have had those informations available to have the meeting. The loophole that we talked about, there is a loophole. The loophole is that the state legislators that made this rule apparently decided that the state shouldn't have to follow the Brown Act. But local groups do.
No, that's not correct, sir.
Well, we can discuss that later. I have the Brown Act here, and I can point
it
out to you.
Melissa, did you want to respond a bit?
The point is, since you gave me a moment to finish my point, the point is that if, in fact, you advertise this as a public meeting and you have on the agenda public input and you say individually that you encourage it, then you should at least allow us to have information and data so that we can study it and come back and ask intelligent questions. It was very difficult for me. I would have liked to have taken some of the proposals home to do some statistical analysis. The rocky areas on your maps have not been available to me to go from. You see how frustrating it is. Then when I went to one of the meetings, individual meetings, and sat for the whole entire thing, I was not allowed to speak. So it's been very frustrating as a public member to have come to three meetings, including the one at Point Arena, thinking that I would have public input. And the Point Arena one, I had plenty of opportunity, but no clue what was going on. So it was like, here I am at the end of this whole process, frustrated, because I feel like I have been left out of the process altogether.
Thank you. I'm only going to say one thing, and that is, this is far from the end of the process. This is kind of in the early to middle part. But Melissa, I believe you had a point or two you wanted to make or respond to.
Yeah, and this is something that I think probably members of the public don't realize, is that one of the things that we committed to our regional stakeholder group members, because these weren't proposals, when we came to this meeting yesterday morning, there were no proposals on the table from this regional stakeholder group. What had been discussed were some preliminary ideas and concepts, and we had made a commitment to these work groups as they were developing those concepts that their work would stay within their group until it was a formal array that was to be evaluated and considered. So we did that today. We completed that task. The individuals at these tables completed that task. And that information will then be taken back by our GIS staff, put onto maps, and made available on our website. And for those who don't have access via the web, we will make them available in print copy. For those of you who would like to be on that mailing list for print copies of the maps, there's a woman at the back of the room waving her arm to, actually, Delbra and Darcy both, who will take your contact information, and we would be happy to add you to that print mailing list to be sure that you receive those maps and those initial arrays that were just completed literally less than an hour ago.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
The
Go
other
ahead,
thing
sir.
I should oh, add. Sorry. For those of you who do have internet access, the regional profile will be posted to our website within the next couple of days, and that has a number of maps available with habitat maps and different types of uses, et cetera. We also, for those of you who don't, again, have that internet access, let Darcy or Delbra know, and we can get you a hard copy or print copy of that of the regional profile as well.
Good, good. Thanks, Melissa, and thanks also for the expression of concern. I think it is something that we are working very hard on, which I think should be evident to all of you from this meeting, but I'm sure there's a little bit of room for improvement.
Susan was just reminding me of something as well. For those who have a DFG office near them, those documents are available there, and in many cases, there's also the opportunity to view things on a computer. To go to the marine map and visit those websites. You just need to contact them, call them up in advance and say, I'd like to come use the computer. When can I do that?
Good resource. Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Steve Morgan, and I'm past president of the North Coast Sport Fishing and Diving Association. And one of my concerns is the Point Arena pier access for the public. You got 50 nautical miles to the north and approximately 50 nautical miles to the south to Bodega Bay and or Fort Bragg north to where you can launch boats off a trailer for the public. In Point Arena is the only spot within 100 nautical miles you can launch a boat off a trailer safely and hopefully go out and go fishing or take the family out on an outing. Now, if you restrict this area and make a reserve in Point Arena and close off especially the northern portion, which is the safest area to go because of the dominant northwest wind, you will be sending a lot of people south to a very dangerous area when the wind comes out of nowhere and will trap a lot of people in these 14 to 18 foot boats with their families. I believe a safe captain knows that if he thinks the wind's going to come up, you need to proceed north towards the lighthouse and have the wind at your back as you come home. It is a safety factor. And I believe between Mother Nature and all the closures to fish and game have already introduced to the fishermen, that we should consider that possibly Point Arena is not the place to put a reserve right next to a public pier that is like the main artery of the whole city. And there is a lot of tourists that move into the area to use this to go abalone and or fishing. And once again, the fishermen's restricted by the wind there already, and there are not that many great days to go fishing. And we would like to be able to say, find a place maybe north of Manchester Beach, and hopefully the fishermen can use Point Arena Pier the way they have in the past. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, sir. My name is Jerry Norton. I live down in Pacific Grove, but I visited up here. I was just counting it up for over 25 years, and we usually stay a couple of weeks, so I've been up here a year out fishing and diving and so forth. I'd like to talk about the Anchor Bay Point Arena area. But before I get into that, I heard quite a bit of discussion about the bird colony on Fish Rock. And I'd like to assure you that that bird colony is almost inaccessible unless you want to lose your boat or your life or something like that. I like that colony a great deal. I enjoy watching the birds, but you don't need to worry about it too much. To go on, you know, at Anchor Bay, there's a group of people who've tried to preserve the situation there for family camping and so forth. I know there's another Anchor Bay LLC member right over here, and he can testify that we have not made any money. It's been very much, in fact, we've had assessments to try to keep that area open for family camping. So in a way, we're on the conservation side, but we're conserving that opportunity for the families. The resource offshore is protected in many ways. It's managed by the wind and seas and old age. Eventually, we get so old that we just don't want to hop in an aluminum boat and go out through the surf, you know. So there's three very stern managers there, and what it has resulted in is a sustained fishery with a very high level of protection. And I think that is something to recognize and to preserve. Throughout the deliberations of the three committees, subcommittees, there was linkage between protecting areas around Point Arena and protecting areas around Saunders Reef. And what that has done, the way those are linked together in discussions, is it has made what's open for fishing at Point Arena and what's open for fishing at Anchor Bay connected, and in a way put us into opposition. And I think that's an unfortunate situation, especially when you're out there in those high winds and seas. If you see somebody that can help you, you want them to help you. You don't want them to be thinking about it. And so there's a safety issue. And on a couple of committees, there was a bottom line of a preserve right at Fish Rock, and I was certainly relieved to see that bumped up to Haven's Neck. But you know, if you could give the Anchor Bay fishers and abalone divers a few rocks on the other side to the north of Haven's Neck, that would certainly be appreciated. And also, because of the high winds and seas, it would not be heavily impacted. It would be as good as a reserve because we can only get out there. The wind really just blows in your teeth, right, when you're out in that area north of Haven's Neck. And it's not a good place to fish most of the time. And to go on, just the last point is that I've talked to you about the high winds and seas, and it's interesting that if we believe in global warming, we understand that those highs of winds and seas are only going to increase, at least in the near future, until we can do something about the CO2 accumulation in the atmosphere. So, you know, it isn't a question of letting us have license to pillage the seas. It's something I would dislike, and I think everybody in this room dislikes that idea. We want controlled access and take advantage of doing this. And, you know, fishing isn't such a bad activity. If you buy a new car every couple of years and drive over, say, 10,000 miles a year, you're impacting the environment a lot more than I am.
Good point. Right? Sir, we need to wrap it up. Thank you very much.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Tracy Buell. I'm from Anchor Bay. I'm a commercial and sport fisherman. And, first of all, I better clear the air. I want to confess to having poached a couple of turkey sandwiches over there, and I hope you won't hold that against me. But thanks for that. It felt like it's time to loosen things up here a little. I'd like to appeal to our stakeholders here today to take into consideration some of the things that have been said here by the last few speakers, specifically Steve Morgan and Jerry and Alan, about the specific circumstances with regard to the SMRs and SMCAs at both Point Arena and north of Point Arena and north of the Fish Rocks. And I'd like to ask that you folks, in doing your magic here over the next few weeks, months, whatever it is, please try your very best to modify those proposals to allow us, I'd like to ask for 2 miles of exclusion to the north of both of those points for sport and commercial fishing. And I won't go over the reasons I've already been well spoken to here today, but mostly for safety purposes, and that they're really, both of those things are necessary to keep both of those ports alive. I believe that if you do that, you can satisfy the goals of the MLPA and also greatly mitigate the impacts to the public here. And I think that's what everyone wants, and I think with a conclusion like that, you'll have I think I'd rather see people really feeling good about it. I think that shows a win for all of us. If we've made a compromise and people walk away from this thing, you know, maybe a little bit upset in the short run, I think if we can compromise on that, I think you'll find that will really be enhancing the quality of life here on the coast and not detracting from it. So thank you for your efforts, and
thank
good
you.
Luck with all that.
Thank you very much.
I think that's it. Just a quick note from AGP Video. We did have some trouble uploading yesterday's session to the internet, and I will not be uploading it until I get back to our office tomorrow. So to review this, you can go to cal-span.org to look at the North Central Coast Stakeholders Group meeting, and it will probably won't be up until mid-afternoon tomorrow. So just as a programming note. Thank
Great.
You.
I want to thank all the speakers. I also just want to reflect from my vantage point, facilitating one of the three work teams today. At several points through the deliberations, members of the work team made specific reference either to conversations they'd had with members of the public or to comments that you had made yesterday or correspondence you had written that they had read. So I think your wish, your plea, your suggestion that your ideas be taken into account is in fact already happening, and we want to encourage you to keep doing that. We are all doing our best to really distill that information and make sure it enters the process. So with that, I believe what we want to do next is to just touch briefly on next steps, and then we've asked our valiant workgroup leads to please huddle with our I team and make sure that we have accurately captured the hard work that your work teams completed today. Eric.
Okay, if we could project the PowerPoint, please. I'm just going to repeat briefly what Melissa said earlier, but there are some key events coming up in the future that you guys should all be aware of. And there's the November 13th SAT meeting in Pacifica, and you're all encouraged to attend. They'll be reviewing and evaluating both the interim draft products that you guys produced today as well as the external proposals. On the 19th and 20th of November in San Rafael, the BRTF will be meeting, and among their agenda items, they too will be receiving the SAT review and looking at these same groups of interim products and external proposals. And then we are basically asking you guys to set aside Wednesday, November 28th. In the past, you've asked us to try to let you know earlier when we're going to plan on having an interim work meeting, and we're anticipating similar to last time, a 10 to 3 or 10 to 4 type day where we'd be reviewing, discussing, incorporating the information received from the SAT and the BRTF and otherwise helping to prepare for the December 11th, 12th RSG meeting in Pacifica. And so we'll be taking comments from you guys in just a second on this. And so we haven't quite figured out exactly how we would design that day, and we've definitely heard some requests from at least one or more of the work groups to be able to continue in the work group setting to incorporate and make some refinements. And we also have heard from you as well some eagerness to start converging and working more in plenary setting. And so we want to take both of these into consideration. Right. So we have, I guess, a couple of minutes to take a couple of questions or comments from RSG members at this point. Sean?
Yeah, mine's real simple. Just, do you guys know yet where the November 28th meeting is going to be?
We don't know specifically where it will be, but we'd like to recommend probably the San Rafael area, central location from both ends of the study region.
Right. There is one other comment we want to make about next steps. We realize how much work you did today and how challenging it was to craft an agenda that both took account of the updates we need to give you, the new information we need to introduce, and to give you time to work. We haven't obviously written the agenda for the next full RSG meeting, but we will for sure put aside a major block of time for development of these arrays of options or proposals. So please be reassured that we will factor that in as we build the next agenda.
Right, and so some of the key objectives for that next full RSG meeting in December would include, again, receiving and discussing the SAT and BRTF feedback, and that might be a continuation of the work that you would do at this work session on November 28th. There will be, I guess, significant time, as Scott mentioned, to continue working, developing arrays, and beginning to craft your more formal MPA proposals. We'll also be receiving, as we have in the past, ongoing information. We want to bring in, hopefully, a presentation on water quality that we actually had to postpone from this meeting because we didn't have enough time. We will have more socioeconomic data coming in that we will also present to you guys. And am I missing anything else? I think those are most of the agenda items.
One more important thing. We realize that this whole work team experiment, and it is in a way an experiment, was perhaps a bit of a surprise. There was a bit of pushback, and then there was pretty wide embrace of the approach. You've now completed at least the first leg of your work, and we would like to welcome any comments or reflections from the regional stakeholder group about either your work today, the work team process, where we are in the overall MLPA process. So you've been working hard, and you're now veterans, and if you have a few comments, we'd be glad to take them.
Francesca?
Or maybe you're too tired to have any comments. Francesca?
I don't have a comment. I have a question from earlier, clarification. Susan, should we expect that you're going to be contacting us with regard to guidance around disturbance, or did you want us to caucus and contact you?
I'd like to request that the people that want to be on the subgroup, I've already been contacted by a couple of people, but why don't you gather around me, and I'll write your names down, and then I will contact you all to set up a call.
Thank you.
Scott, just as a
yes,
Blue Ribbon Task
please.
Force member, and I know Don, my fellow task force member, who was able to be with you yesterday and today, would share in these comments, and I invite his comments as well. I have just been so impressed with what I have seen today, and I wanted to thank each and every one of you for the commitment that you're giving to this process. It was really your commitment that gave me the energy to drive over here today, late last night, and spend this day with you, and I really appreciate that, because I've had an opportunity to sit in each of your work groups, I think twice today, and I was just so impressed again with your ability to be so courteous with one another and respectful, and your really willingness to try to understand the other person's viewpoint. Even at times catching yourselves when you interrupted someone and said, you know, I'm sorry, no, go ahead. I mean, it was really, really, really commendable, and I wanted to thank you all for that commitment, and just keep it up. We're very, very interested to see how you all, as three work groups, now come together at some point, I imagine, as one work group. I don't know what that process necessarily is, but we're really looking forward to it. And again, I will be going to the next SAP meeting, so I want to sit through that process as well and see how that works. And thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Don.
I just echo the same comments. Also wanted to show my appreciation for the facilitators. Very, very good job of facilitating. That's tough to do. And also the fact that the groups weren't self-selected is very impressive. You were with people who had a real mix of backgrounds. And it was interesting for me to listen to some of you talk about the fact that you knew where the parking spots were next to a particular location. You knew how to take a boat out, and others perhaps hadn't even been to that section, and yet you were all talking together trying to get a solution. Very impressive, and enjoyed being a part of it.
Thank you, Don and Kathy, and thank you both very much for your dedication and time in being here. You're now official emissaries to the full task force. We'll see how that plays out at the next meeting. Karen, you had a comment or question.
Well, I just want to thank our Blue Ribbon Task Force members, too, for coming. It's been great to have you here. And particularly, I want to thank my colleagues on the RSG. I was a skeptic of these involuntary groups.
Semi-precious groups.
I have to say I have been won over to the approach, and I've been particularly impressed at how all of my colleagues on the RSG have reached out to people to get more information, have responded to that information, have listened, and really seem to be in a collective process of gathering information and filtering it through this group. I think it's very unusual, and I just want to say thanks to all of you.
Thanks for...
And I guess I would just add that there were moments where it really did feel like a collective design process, and I stopped thinking about being cagey and strategic and everything else, and that's a real pleasure when it happens.
Well, thank you for putting your best foot forward and doing that, Karen. Any other RSG members who were either cagey or pleased or enlightened? Bill? Saucy? Yeah.
Sure, I'll be glad to join in this. First of all, I'd like to thank the audience and the public of the area for allowing me to represent such a unique fishery. I appreciate the opportunity. I hear exactly what every one of you are saying, and I'm trying my best to represent that interest. To everybody else, good job. I enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks very much. Ben.
So the work groups. Now, I was somewhat skeptical as well, you know, when we started. And while I don't know that I'd characterize my thoughts as being completely won over, they have worked well. I will give you a suggestion possibly for the future, though. And we have a number of people on here that represent either state or federal agencies. We've been very fortunate to have Don, and he's been able to answer, you know, very tough questions about Point Reyes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the expense was I didn't have Craig. And so in many cases, I kind of wish that there were other mm-hmm. folks that we could have
yes.
drawn on. I don't know how you do that, but a suggestion for the future would be to make those type of people yep. available broadly to everybody. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, this effort we're involved in is incredibly information intensive, and we've really tried to, you know, tee up the scientific information, the socioeconomic information, the legal information, and provide all of it to you in real time, which, of course, makes it too much to digest at once. So it's a balancing act, and I agree, that was a tough trade-off to make, to not have all the agencies and all the groups. Ken, did you have a comment?
I'll try to keep it short, as always. yeah, I just wanted to thank everybody also. Like Ben and quite a few people, I had certain reservations, which you've read in numerous memos that I've sent out, notes I've sent out about breaking into groups. But I was very pleased the work we accomplished the last 2 days. Very tiring, but also I think very productive. I've really grown close to my Emerald team, even though we have some obvious differences at time, but it's very nice. But I also especially, and I want to echo the words of Bill and thank the people from the North Coast. As a former resident of the North Coast, it's a unique area. It's a special area. It's an area which, unless you've lived up here, I don't think you can always have the real feel of what it's all about and how special and valuable it is. And I know it's also very hard to take your time off work and to come here and to some degree probably be a little bit overwhelmed, because we're overwhelmed at time, and I'm sure coming new into it, not having a lot of background what we've gone through already, it had to be overwhelming to all of you. So I really want to thank the people that came out here the last 2 days, and some of you were also at the Point Arena meeting the other night, so you've been here 3 days, so I really do appreciate that a lot. Thanks.
Thanks, Ken. One more appreciation is due, and that is to the people that hosted us in this venue and fed us and took care of us and tolerated us and welcomed us. So they did a great job. So we really appreciate that. Yes, look, AGP Video is now a model for the Wallala Arts Center.
Steve's T-shirt. Scott, one thing, too, that I'd like to pay special tribute to the staff that have been supporting this process. We have people that are not 8-to-5ers. This is 24/7. The reason this happens is because the people you see working around this table, email traffic, I look at my email record and every hour of the day is covered because people are up thinking about this, working on this, and that's why this happens. That's why you're able to have the information. So to all our staff, both from the department and the initiative, and especially the GIS staff that has just done a phenomenal job. In fact, the GIS team, would you stand up? I mean, they're not all here. Okay, all right, Paul. Okay. Yeah, some of them are still working in the back to get this all right. That is your 24/7 team, and so it's making this a tremendous process. So thank you all for being here.
Great. Thanks, Ken. Any other final remarks? Good. Great job, everyone. Science questions? No, not science questions. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned. Great job.